America's Cannabis Conversation. Heard every Saturday at 4:20 p.m. online at americascannabisconversation.com. We're part of the W420 Radio Network. Tune in each week to hear updates from the National Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, tips on investing in cannabis markets, personal success stories, and more. It's now time to join America's Cannabis Conversation. Time now for another intriguing tale on the ever-fascinating cannabis trail with W420 Radio Network's lifestyle correspondent, Rich Wolkoff.
Hey, cannabis fans. I don't know if you believe in the afterlife, but I think I found heaven on earth right here at Luma Farms, kind of a boutique grow in Pengrove, California, just about an hour north of San Francisco. And we're here with the director of cultivation, the amazing Enzo. You're the botanist. You're the horticultural guy. You're the guru of weed, man. What do we got going on here? This is phenomenal.
Here we have organically grown, regenerative, sustainable practices, utilizing living soil, working with cover plants and cover crops and organisms, and building soil health.
Yeah, ultimately. You talk about living soil. What is that all about? Because there's a different. We had Patrick King, the soil king,
talking about. Yeah.
There's dirt that's dead, and there's soil that's living, and that's what you want, and that's what you have.
Absolutely. Living soil has to do with organisms and the communities of organisms that are in the soil, earthworms and other plant species. Mm-hmm. Living soil utilizes these organisms to cycle the nutrients instead of relying on synthetic soluble fertilizer. Mm-hmm. These organisms in the living soil, which makes living soil, actually help feed the plants.
So now you guys are making hash oil, rosin. Tell me a little bit about rosin, which a lot of people may not even know about.
Rosin is made by heat and pressure being applied to bubble hash. It is the most refined concentrate made solventlessly that you can create.
Yeah. And about the soil, how key is it? I mean, there's commercial soils, there's, you know, so-called organic soils, but what are you looking for? What are some of the key considerations when you create the foundation for your plants?
Yeah, you want to build soil with quality inputs. You want to have foresight into drainage and moisture retention and all the different components that will allow your soil to function correctly. The best soil is native soil, is revitalizing native soil, and that's essentially what we're doing here.
So in your soil, we're talking about what you put into it
to
supplement it or give it added nutrients?
So constantly paying attention to the phase of the plant's life. We add organic amendments, organic matter in the form of different plants.
Mm-hmm. And I know you told me it's not just the plant in the raised bed. Their roots are going deep, so it's not like a planter, because that's going to inhibit the growth.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, here in the Petaluma Gap where we are at, in Pengrove, we're on adobe, and I understand it to be ancient seabed, so highly mineralized, but also very compact. So that plays into terroir. Mm-hmm. It's one of the factors that you may or may not be able to have a say in. Mm-hmm. Is the composition of this native soil.
So how many different varieties do you have? And are they from clones, from seed? What's the genesis?
Right now we have over 70 varieties. That is because we are hunting through some to find something special. Most everything here is from clone, but there was some seeds grown and clones taken from them to be tested.
Okay, what's your fave and what's your go-to?
My fave is actually one that I created a couple years ago called Lemon Limes, and it's extremely potent, and it leaves you wondering where you are.
In a good way.
In a good way.
I gotta ask you, some people are enamored with the THC.
Yes.
And Bob Stefano from Villa Paradiso up in, he's one of the Humboldt original high five guys.
Yeah.
Said to me, don't get caught up in THC. That's like telling me a Dodge Charger is a better car than a Ferrari.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are enamored with, oh, look, I got 30% THC. I love that.
It's very short-sighted.
Yeah, it's not the full spectrum. The entourage is more important, right?
Absolutely. You will not experience all that the plant has to offer if you're just going for a product with a high THC.
Yeah.
A lot of those labs, too, are deceiving. So as a consumer, you may not be really getting what you're after,
yeah.
you know, and you're being sold kind of an effect with a ceiling, you know, it's going to kind of reach a point and you're never going to get past that.
Well, again, it's not just about horsepower, right? And THC is the metaphor for the horsepower of the plant, but there's much more to it. So you're looking to create something that gives you maybe the nice buzz, a certain euphoric full spectrum experience of the plant, whether it's medicinal, recreational, or whatever.
A lot of the focus lately has been on finding genetics that have very unique flavors, very profound, exotic flavors. When making hash and rosin, that's kind of the focus. People aren't really thinking about the THC percentage as much in that community mm-hmm. or demographic. They are focused on the enjoyment of the flavor.
And with Enzo, the director of cultivation at Luma Farms here in Pengrove, California, I'm Rich Walkoff on the W420 Radio Network, and we'll be right back. Hey, we're returning to the scene of the farm, Luma Farms in Pengrove, California. I'm Rich Walkoff, along with Enzo, the director of cultivation, and Curtis Wall, the founder of Luma Farms. It's an amazing biodynamic organic grow, and we were here a few months ago and it was close to harvest time, so it was the peak of the colas and the flowers, and now it's approaching winter time. What's going on? You've been working your tails off to create this product, fresh frozen, I'm hearing about for the first time. What's that all about?
Fresh frozen weed is capturing the resin in its quote unquote live state as it was growing on the plant without the not letting it have the opportunity to dry. So you're freezing the plant while it's still green, while it's still got moisture in it, and it's essentially still alive, and you're putting it into a frozen state to capture the essences, the terpenes, the cannabinoids, just as they were during the growth stages.
Yeah, and oxygen is the enemy, right? You don't want oxygen around it. You don't want light around it after you harvest. So tell me a little bit about that, Curtis, if you would.
Yeah, you definitely don't want, especially when you're drying cannabis in its dry form, you definitely don't want any light in there. It can degrade the terpenes and cannabinoids and all those different things. With fresh frozen, it goes right into a big bin and it goes into the freezer and it doesn't see any light until it gets to the extractor.
Now, how long do you have to keep it like that?
You have about 20 minutes to get it into the freezer from harvest before degradation sets in. As far as length of time in the freezer, if you have your parameters set correctly, you could live in the freezer for a couple years.
Wow. But what is your general timeline?
We would love to get it to the consumer as fast as possible. There's just all the hurdles of the regulations.
Now, well, you're doing it as a commercial, kind of a boutique grow, because you have the high end. It's the cleanest. You don't use any of the chemicals. It's living soil, as you commonly talk about. But what about a home grow? I mean, I'm just an average Joe, and I got a few plants, and I want to cure, I want to dry, I want to cure and process. What are some of the tips that you could pass along as the expert growers?
I would say some great tips are put it in a dark room, hang it upside down, get a low airflow around it, not direct airflow, 60% humidity, 60 degrees temperature, and about 14 days.
Oh, good. I've done all those things. And we had a big storm in Northern California a few weeks ago, and my home grow, those buds were just falling over. Oh, they were so wet. They had just soaked up all the rain, with 8 inches of rain. And thankfully, after 2 weeks with dehumidifiers and fans and everything, things have dried, and we're in the next phase of, you know, now going to trim and jar them up. And then aerating in jars. I mean, what do you do in a commercial enterprise like this, even though, as I say, it's kind of boutique because you're not doing massive quantities, although it's a healthy number.
Yeah.
And then what would you do residentially or, you know, the home grow?
So the home grow, I would treat every jar as an environment, and I would allow the gases, things off gassing to build up in that jar. And then every other day I would burp it for 30 to 45 minutes until you reach a consistency, a moisture consistency that you really like.
Yeah. Now you guys have a specialty. You're not just growing great weed. And if we could bring in some of these beauties, you have a variety of crops. These are 8 samples, right? And what are you growing? And then not just for the flowers, which are magnificent, but you have something else going on that is, it takes you to a whole nother level. So I'll defer to the founder here, Curtis.
Yeah, so we grow genetics that are supposed to be good for making hash. Things that are the customer's really going to want. They like very fruity flavors, mm-hmm. Desserts, things like that. Anything that's super unique and special that they can't find at any other place. So that's pretty much what we're looking for in our genetic selection for our outdoor.
Okay, so when you make hash, now Enzo told us a little bit about this in our first conversation, but part two, maybe you can expand upon it. Tell us why what you do is so much better and why you do what you do.
Well, what we do is we grow cannabis in what we believe is the best way possible. And then we work with the best people in our industry and in our space to make the hash and the rosin. And those people take it from the freezer and they bring it into a cold room. It then goes into a washing machine. It could be hand stirred or it could be machine stirred depending on the infrastructure setup. They then pour that solution through a set of filters, catching the different size glands through all those different filters. Now you take the glands that have been caught in those filters and you put them into a freeze dryer. You effectively dry the glands, remove the moisture without letting them oxidize, without the presence of oxygen, because there's a vacuum on this freeze dryer. So now you pull out your resin and it's in a pristine state. It's white, it hasn't oxidized, it's all heads. And now you have the raw material to press rosin. Rosin is the refinement of hash. It is hash pressed through more filtration with heat and pressure.
Wow, wow. So if I hear something about diamonds and honey.
So diamonds are made just like in the environment and in the earth, heat and pressure. In the solventless world, you would put rosin into a jar and you would seal it and you would let that jar reach room temperature. That's the heat. The pressure is the seal and you not breaking the seal and allowing those gases to build into that. So that's how we make solventless diamonds. How you make the BHO ones, that's a whole nother process that we don't really partake
in. Yeah, solvents are harsh, sometimes dangerous chemicals, but they're used in the process in most commercial hash manufacturing. You guys don't do that, and you tell me why, please.
We believe in healthy consumption. We grow in what we believe is the healthiest way to grow to produce the best produce for human consumption and the impact on the earth. When you use a thing like butane or any of those harsh volatile solvents to extract from a plant, it doesn't go hand in hand with the style of cultivation and the life that we like to live, you know, the healthy lifestyle.
You know, state of California and many states have very stringent regulations. So how is that monitored? And are you get that good seal of approval? Do you get that organic, you know, butane-free tag on it when you create your rosin and such?
No, they don't offer anything like that. We couldn't even use the word organic on any of our packaging.
That's
up to this day.
That's unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah, it's bonkers. I think that there's something coming along through the pipeline where they're going to start allowing us to use the word organic.
Yeah, but think about it. Your process is more laborious and probably more costly and better. The other one is cheaper and more, you know, volume-oriented. So if the consumer is left in the dark, I mean, where's the win on that? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, for the longest time, I was also left in the dark, you know, kind of being new to the space and seeing the different consistencies and colors that I've never really seen before, because you're able to really filter out a lot of the you know, darker sort of impurities yeah, in the flower and in the product. So for me, going to the dispensary, I was like, oh, this is great, you know? But then it's over the past 2-3 years when I've only been smoking solventless strictly, I've really realized the difference going back, trying some of this, you know, sauce or diamonds or,
right.
It hurts my throat.
Right.
And I'm not just saying that.
No, I bet. It's sort of like when you get black market weed where you don't know what chemicals were put in to the process of growing it, whereas if you get it from a dispensary, you know it's authenticated in terms of that aspect of it. But the fact that they don't distinguish between what you're doing and the chemical-infused or created hash and rosin is really baffling, as I say. So, guys, I tried that, and, man, it is freaking awesome. And it's smooth. It's clean. It's a really sweet high. And I just think you guys are killing it. By the way, we're in a studio that will rival anything I've ever been in. I mean, this is like Hollywood comes to Northern California, man. This is awesome. You've got state-of-the-art, everything going on. And I don't know about many grows that have a setup like you do here at Luma Farms. So tell me about what are we all about here?
Yeah, so this is Luma Studio, Luma Network. We're trying to, first and foremost, promote our brand, Luma. We're trying to, you know, think long-term, 3 to 5 years. Once cannabis goes national, we're able to cross state lines and, you know, sell to consumers everywhere. We want to make sure that, you know, we're already in their hearts and minds.
Yeah, so you can create content as well as growing the great stuff. And then you could tell your story like you are here on the America's Cannabis Conversation. We're giving you a forum because I love your stuff and you guys are awesome. So Enzo, when you come into a studio like this and you get a chance to tell your tale, I mean, what are some of the secrets that you can reveal that we haven't discussed about your process of harvesting, curing, processing, and the like?
Genetic selection, maintaining the nursery space, mother rooms, the great amount of effort that goes into weathering the storms. Yeah. Speaking of storms, we just had a hell of a storm recently, which we weathered through harvest. Just the culmination of effort that goes into literally every layer. No shortcuts taken. We strive to do our best at every stage. We really believe and care about everything that we do here.
Yeah, now obviously I could tell, I could see it, I could taste it. But when you grow a few hundred plants versus these commercial grows, these massive commercial grows that may be growing thousands, differentiate. Tell me what's the difference between how you process, cure, and deliver your flowers and hash and rosin and the like versus the massive like agribusiness growth.
I'd put it in one word, care. We take the care and the thoughtfulness and the consideration to do every step right. And we have a small enough, even though it's not, you know, it's a sizable grow that we have here, it's small enough to pay attention to everything. Mm-hmm. Things don't get overlooked. We're not spread so thin that we have to cut corners. These are the things you see when you scale up. You lose craft when you scale because it's hard to delegate craft. It's hard to delegate what one person does to an army of employees.
Right. That's a great word, the craft. I refer to you guys as kind of the boutique, well, a similar vein. In
absolutely.
That it's like you're handcrafted, you're monitoring every plant, every cola, versus these massive machine-hewn enterprises.
We are harvesting by hand. We're bucking by hand. We're doing all this process very intimately.
Yeah.
One question that you had asked earlier was how does someone cure on small scale versus large scale? On a small scale, I was saying, you know, in jars and burping it every 45 minutes, every other day till you're at the right moisture. Large scale, we can't put that much weed in that many jars. It's not cost efficient or space efficient or labor efficient.
Sure.
And so what we have to do is we have to create an environment, a huge environment that is like a jar. And we treat the huge environment like a jar.
Right. Well, that's why your stuff is so awesome.
That's one that part of it.
Great stuff, guys. You've only been around a few years, but I think the best is yet to come. Congrats on all your successes on the America's Cannabis Conversation. We're with Enzo and Curtis Wall here at Luma Farms in Pengrove, California, on the W420 Radio Network.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com.
Sun is the source of all our living things, but when winter comes, or the clouds come, or night comes, indoor farms turn to artificial light to make their crops grow. We're talking with Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy. He's the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. We're getting a lighting 101 from you, Joe. I'm learning so much. The business energy assessment that you provide to growers, no cost. Tell me more.
It's a great program through Xcel Energy. We have a team here in Colorado that collectively has over 20 years of experience in the cannabis industry, in the controlled environment ag industry. Xcel has hired Franklin Energy to really give growers free advice on how to save energy. So we are free consultants. So we go into grow facilities and take PPFD, light intensity measurements. We measure VPD for growers. We take all environmental measurements, and then we go ahead and provide growers with the report that has recommendations for not only energy savings, but also optimizing growers' environment so they can increase yield and whatnot. So again, that's completely free. Xcel Energy pays the bill for growers' free consultants. And typically it takes a couple hours, we're in and we're out. And then, you know, we give you that really good report that is going to provide recommendations for how you can save money and help out your bottom line. We look at all cultivation equipment within the facility. So like you said, HVAC, dehumidification, airflow and fans. We'll look at your control systems, right? And then we'll make recommendations either how to tweak those systems to perform better now or recommendations to potentially swap out that equipment for more efficient equipment. And on top of that, we will provide energy savings calculations for all those recommendations and estimated rebates for what you might receive by moving forward with those recommendations. On top of that, we're available to really help growers and hold their hand through the entire process of an upgrade.
If I have an indoor grow and I want to make a transition to LEDs and I want to get that Franklin Energy rebate, tell us what we've got to do.
You can contact the Xcel Indoor Ag Program at xcelenergy.com. That's xcelenergy.com. And then from there, you navigate up top to business customers and then select rebates from the dropdown. And finally, you can select business lighting from there. But to get information fast, my email address is jsullivan@franklinenergy.com. Telephone number is 720-822-3719. One of our amazing cultivation energy advisors will help you get started along your journey to be more efficient.
And that's Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy, the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. He's a Jedi. Thanks so much, Joe. This is Rich Walkoff on America's Cannabis Conversation.
AmericasCannabisConversation.com. It's time for Women in Cannabis on America's Cannabis Conversation, part of the W420 Radio Network.
Didn't you get the memo?
Here's Chase Roberts.
Welcome back to the conversation. This is Chase Roberts, Women in Cannabis correspondent for the W420 Radio Network. It's a pleasure to introduce Penny Cook, Acting Chief Operating Officer and Advisor of Lemon Haze. Lemon Haze is a B2B cannabis events company. Penny, welcome. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm great, Chase. Happy to be here.
We're really happy to have you. I always like to start at the beginning. Can you tell me a little bit about your life? Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school?
Oh, sure. So I actually grew up in Philadelphia. I'm an East Coaster at heart.
Love it.
I went to school at Wesleyan University in Connecticut. And after I graduated, I realized I could be unemployed in the city of my choice and decided to get in my car with one of my college roommates. And we drove around the country for a month and ended up in Seattle. And I had never lived on the West Coast. I thought it would be a great adventure for 6 months or so. And yeah, I had planned to go back to the East Coast and, you know, in either Boston or DC and get a real job like everybody else. And that was over 25 years ago, and I'm still here in Seattle.
Love it. That month sounds like it was probably a pretty pivotal month in your life.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I can't imagine going back and doing that now, but really seeing the whole country and having some time to really think about what was next after college was great. And then ending up in a place like where I really found, I found community and I found industry and learned about the whole startup culture that the West Coast has. And I really, you know, I became part of it and I fell in love with it. And I think that's a lot of what feeds how Seattle has been in the forefront of the cannabis industry and how I got into that in the first place.
I was going to ask you, did you ever imagine you would be in this industry?
Not at all. Not at all.
And no one ever does. No one ever does.
Right. I mean, I think growing up and through college, I was part of, you know, the generation that was fed the stigma that marijuana was a drug and you should stay away from it. And thank goodness I'm in a forward-thinking place where I really got to be re-educated pretty quickly in understanding that it's a great tool for wellness.
Absolutely. We're going to go into all the benefits. And I just want to mention really quick to our listeners that you also are the chief operating officer at Zonin. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Zonin CBD. Yep. Zonin CBD is athlete founded. So we are, we're part of a professional athlete network that produces CBD products for athletes and active adults to perform better, to recover more quickly, to gain more mental focus, and really promote an overall healthy, active lifestyle, which is something that, you know, cannabinoids are amazing things. And we're really at the very beginning of learning what cannabinoids can do to help promote wellness in our bodies. And there's a lot to be said for cannabinoids like CBD and THC, helping us relax and sleep. But there's a lot of research going on now, and a lot of people are taking this to actually perform better during their day. You know,
The NFL is actively right now trying to pursue that research.
Yep.
If I got that correct. Yeah. And I'm really happy about that. And I noticed you serve on the board of commissioners for Seattle Sports. Is that directly related to your work?
So I did. I'm not a commissioner at this point. But no, those were all, that was kind of a coincidence in my professional career, but it is where I met a lot of the folks that I work with now, Zonin CBD, and a lot of the contacts that are relevant to Lemon Haze as well. And, you know, it's great to be part of organizations that promote community and healthy lifestyles. And that's one of the reasons why I was so passionate about being part of the Seattle Sports Commission, because it was not just professional sports, but it's sports going all the way down to getting youth involved, getting communities involved. How do you build positive community around things that make people healthy? And there's so much in common that has with the cannabis community.
Absolutely. And tell us about Lemon Haze. I find it very interesting. Lemon Haze provides first class events for businesses in the cannabis industry. And you have several different kinds of events. Can you tell us a little more about the mission of Lemon Haze? And maybe we could go one by one about the events you guys do.
Sure. So our mission is really to help the cannabis industry grow, and by providing connections that haven't been made available to the cannabis industry through, you know, normal means.
Yeah.
Right. So instead of, you know, trade shows are great and they help people get a sense of the larger picture of what's out there, we throw very small boutique focused events that take that trade show and really boil it down to the people who are there are the people who need to meet each other to grow their businesses in the industry. So for example, our virtual upfronts, we connect brands and buyers in an online kind of speed dating format where we get, you know, a whole bunch of retailers to log on and a whole bunch of brands buy into it. And we set up meetings one after another at a 15-minute clip where they all get to meet each other. So there's no, you know, kind of back and forth. When are we going to talk? The brands driving around to different retailers or trying to get in touch with the buyers. We put them all in one virtual spot where from the comfort of their own store or their own production facility, they can meet. And the outcomes of those, we see lots more business going on than leaving everybody on their own to try and connect and get those products in retailers and then in consumers' hands.
That's so necessary. And especially with the ongoing COVID stuff. I mean, this is so valuable. It's direct, it's effective. I think very necessary. And I'm sure so many good business partnerships happen out of that. And you guys also have bud tender parties.
We do. Our bud tender's first events are kind of the bread and butter of who Lemon Haze is. It's where we started throwing events. And it's for the most important people in the cannabis industry, really are the bud tenders. And making them the VIPs at these events, it really is recognizing where the most important decision making happens in cannabis, and it's at the counter where the consumer is making that purchase. So we throw these parties where hundreds of bud tenders show up because we're connected to them, and we have ways to get to them in every region that we're in the country. And they show up at these great parties. There's food and there's drink, and then all of the brands that we have in our network come and set up booths where there's information and there's engagement and fun things for them to do. And through our surveys, we understand that bud tenders are over 70% more likely to recommend a product that they were educated about at one of these events than they are to recommend something else at the counter with a consumer.
Now, what is your vetting process? Like if a listener is part of a company and is like, oh, I want to be there, can people just go to your website and apply or contact you? How does this process work?
Oh, sure. So for bud tenders, we actually validate employment at a retailer. So we guarantee to all the brands who come, who buy sponsorship packages there, that all of the bud tenders that they meet are current active bud tenders. And so we just have a confirmation process on the back end. So if you're a bud tender and you want to RSVP for one of those events on our site, you go in through the process, you submit your credentials, you get approved, and then you get a ticket. It's free for all bud tenders.
That is an amazing service.
Yep. Yep. And for brands, you need to have good products and be relevant in that market. And we love to help brands that are just starting out. We love to connect with women and people of color owned brands. And we love to connect with the brands out there who are also well established and well loved. All of those things are really relevant to the consumer, and the bud tenders really love to connect with all of them. So anybody who's out there who is putting product in their local cannabis retailers really should be at one of these bud tender parties to connect with bud tenders. And they really get to talk to, depending on the size of the event, 200 to 500 bud tenders in one evening.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's really big.
Yeah. And Chase, more than anything, every one of these events that we throw also is really fun. Everybody has an amazing time. I mean, if not just for the business aspect of it, but people come back because it's just an amazing time to be had. I mean, it's something that I think is really essential to the industry, that we all have fun doing Absolutely. What it is that we do. And so, you know, there's food, there's music, there's consumption, and really networking with the people who care about things you do. And it's always an amazing crowd. And the bud tenders, I have to say, are the most fun people to throw a party for.
I believe that. And do you know when the next one is? Is there something lined up?
Actually, yep. The next bud tender party is tomorrow night in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
Yep. So on February 4th, and then on February 6th, there's a bud tender party in Seattle, Washington. And then in 2 weeks, starting on February 16th, there are bud tender parties in Oakland, California and San Diego, California. And I would say check the website for dates, because we're adding more all the time, and we're going to be all over the country this year.
Can you let our listeners know the website to go to check the schedule?
Oh, sure. It's lemonhaze.com. So lemon, like the fruit, haze, haze.com.
And what is the story behind the name? Is there a story behind the name?
There's really not that much of a story. It's the name of a strain that everyone in the company was a fan of. And we love to lean into the lemon part of it. It's a little kitschy and fun, and it appears at every one of our events. And that's it. It's connected to the industry, and it kind of showcases that fun, quirky feeling that we have at all of our events.
The fact you found a strain that everyone agreed upon, that right? is a feat. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And I know you guys had your first, you guys do executive golf classics. You had your first one in October. How did that go?
Yeah, actually, we ran a series of them in 2021. And we were pleased and amazed at the response to them. So our founder, Brian Yager, is and always has been an avid golfer. And he's also really astute at listening to what this market needs and responding to it. So in the middle of the pandemic, there wasn't much that we could do in terms of events in person. And something that he was doing to stay connected to the Cannabis Network was he would go golfing with people because it's outdoors, you can stay safely socially distanced. And more executives were contacting him saying, hey, I want to golf with you. I want to talk to you too. It was a place to network. It was a place to come together with other people. People were starting to request other people to golf with him. And then sponsors were like, hey, how much can I pay to get in and buy you guys a round of golf or buy you guys a round of drinks? And all of a sudden this turned into an event. Hey, let's invite these executives who want to be part of this. And then sponsors can come in and network with them. And so
how big are these groups?
So for a whole tournament at this point, we have between 120 and 140 golfers. And those are all, those are mostly made up of brand executives, both C-suite executives, VPs, and directors from cannabis brands and some ancillaries as well.
Do you feel comfortable mentioning some of the brands that have participated?
Oh, sure. I mean, really, I would say all the big national names you could think of. We've had people from Cookies and Cresco Labs, GTI, Wild, Curaleaf. And then as we go regionally, we also are able to include, and it's most important to us, to include the local brands, that are up and coming, brands that need to be connected, and also some brands that are already established regionally. So we like to have a good mix of the MSOs, the big national brands, and what's happening regionally, because we really honor that as we go into a city or a region with these events. And then it's really valuable for all these ancillary sponsors to come in and meet these people. It's a way to get into the cannabis business for anybody who's either starting a company and is new and needs to connect. Where do I connect with the people I need to talk to? Come to our event and you'll see a concentrated audience of those executives who are the decision makers that you need to connect with. And we're seeing more and more mainstream companies who know that a valuable part of their business is going to be in cannabis. And they're starting to come to these events, pay to be sponsors at these events, to connect with these executives, to open up that part of their business. Healthcare companies, accounting companies, legal companies, architectural companies, who have all been part of the mainstream, who are now seeing cannabis, now seeing the value in being part of the cannabis industry, which is something that we are really pushing to mainstream the entire industry as we know it absolutely deserves to be.
It's slowly getting there. Actually, we're at the launching point now where everyone's kind of all in based on, you know, cannabis is money at this point and the predictions of what's going to be coming in. And it does impact almost every industry. For these events, do you have certain cities you guys always hit, or are you open to new cities? How does that work?
So we are expanding our map around the country every year that we do this. Last year was the first year in golf tournaments, and we tried to hit all of the major metro areas right now where cannabis is legalized and becoming a big business. We've expanded the map this year, and we're already talking about our 2023 season and expanding the map even further. So we're really excited to see the business itself expanding and then bringing our events out there to help connect all the pieces of that business to help it grow everywhere.
Is there any thoughts of going global?
We've talked about it. We want to make sure that we're taking care of everyone who's in our network. We don't want to grow too fast, but we will be expanding quite a bit as we're able to.
And I also want to mention, you guys also do cannabis conventions. Are those also listed on your website or?
So we have done cannabis conventions in the past. We've done pretty big conventions, and there are other conventions that are out there. But really where we're focused right now are these boutique, smaller events where the people who need to meet each other are the people at the event. And you're not guessing if somebody's walking by your booth, if they're the decision maker at a company, or if you need to talk to them. We're focused on putting together these small events that if you show up, the target audience that you're looking for is who we're putting in front of you.
Such a valuable, important, you're building relationships that need to happen. It's all about relationships, and Lemon Haze is really doing a great job at doing the networking, building these relationships for people. As a woman in the industry, do you have any advice for women in the industry?
Sure. You know, it's really unique to be in a leadership position like this, because I've been in technology. I've been in consumer packaged goods, and I've been in consulting. And, you know, in every industry, you don't find an overwhelming number of women in leadership positions. And we have the same challenges here in cannabis, I would say, but it really does feel like the door is a little bit more open in cannabis than it is in other industries. And Chase, it's something that we also pay close attention to. So we've gotten a lot of feedback about our golf tournaments, for example, that more, you know, people have the perception that more men golf than women do. And really what we found is that there are more male executives out there who were able to invite to these golf tournaments than women executives that we're finding. So what we've done is we have purposefully created a network where we're finding the women executives and we're finding the people of color executives and promoting these companies that they're part of to get them into our events, to create that diversity and to create a better leadership path in the cannabis industry. It's something that we understand is really important, and we know it resonates all the way through the industry to the bud tenders and to the consumers. It creates a better experience all around. So, you know, I'm particularly sensitive to that being a woman in leadership in cannabis. And something that we want to do is we want to make sure that door is wide open for all opportunities.
Fantastic that you guys are taking the time to make sure that's happening.
Absolutely. It's really important to us. And we know that it's important in the ultimate success of the industry.
Absolutely. Well, Penny, I can't believe this. Our time is out. I want to really thank you for being here. If you missed any of this great interview with Penny Cook, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com and click on the archive section to listen to this and other great interviews. And we'll be right back.
When winter comes or the clouds come or night comes, indoor farms turn to artificial light to make their crops grow. Let's say hello to an expert, Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy. He is the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. Everybody knows that indoor grow is more challenging, and then again, it can be more advantageous because you can control the ecosystem and your environment.
A word for indoor ag or indoor growing would also be controlled environment agriculture. And, you know, that's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to control and provide the best possible environment. Far and away, LED is the best source to provide light for plants to grow. They're more energy efficient, they use less wattage, and they provide same amount, if not better, light than high pressure sodium, metal halide, and other traditional light sources. They're more of a broad spectrum light source, so they're providing light within the photosynthetic active radiation wavelengths really more broadly than your traditional light sources. They last longer and they're traditionally more reliable than high pressure sodium, metal halide, and, you know, those types of light sources.
I understand it can reduce grow time up to 30%. They can last up to 50,000 hours. They are more durable than fluorescents and they emit less heat. It's like a no-brainer.
And I understand that Franklin Energy is giving consumers an opportunity to capitalize on LEDs if they want to upgrade their lighting system. So tell us what's going on.
Franklin Energy runs and implements rebate programs for utilities all across the country.
If I have an indoor grow and I want to make a transition to LEDs and I want to get that Franklin Energy rebate, tell us what we've got to do.
You can contact the Xcel Indoor Ag Program at xcelenergy.com. That's xcelenergy.com. And then from there, you navigate up top to business customers and then select rebates from the dropdown. And finally, you can select business lighting from there. My email address is jsullivan@franklinenergy.com. Telephone number is 720-822-3719. One of our amazing cultivation energy advisors will help you get started along your journey to be more efficient.
Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy, the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. Thanks so much, Joe. This is Rich Walkoff on America's Cannabis Conversation.
Well, California is number one in cannabis sales of $3 billion in 2019 of any entity in the world, yet 80% of those funds go to the illegal black market. So what do we do about that? And we're joined now by Tara Carver, the co-founder and executive director of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance. So you are in the epicenter. You are in the Emerald Triangle, where the best and the most beautiful cannabis is grown, yet it's harder and harder to make it fly because of the restrictions and the cumbersome bureaucracies and the like. But how's it going?
It's going. We're scrappy. And so our alliance is 3.5 years old. However, we have farmers and legacy producers that have been in the industry for over 60 years. So we're very proud of our heritage and our history. And, you know, this isn't the first time that we've had to overcome major hurdles. We've lived and survived the war on drugs, friction, controversy, and strain, I guess, is pretty familiar territory for us.
Yeah. So is it getting better with the cooperation among the growers in Humboldt and the state? Because this is all, it's all relatively new. I mean, it's only been 2 years in California. You are growing the finest cannabis in the world, yet you're kind of behind the eight ball.
Yeah, I think part of the reality of legalization is not only is our farmers having to become business people and start understanding all the complicated factors that go into running a business, but the state agencies also had to set themselves up. And so as they've been developing, we're all kind of building together. As a trade association, we've gone through this too. And so it's been a lot of growth for industry, trade associations, and the local and state government. I'm proud of the work we've done, though. It's not all doom and gloom. There's a lot of doom and gloom out there, but I can actually say that Humboldt County's doing pretty well.
Yeah, well, that's great to hear. But the restriction on, the dual licensing, you've got municipality licenses, you've got state licenses, then you've got excise taxes, you've got cultivation taxes. It seems like they keep setting up roadblocks, not they, the state has, and it makes it more cumbersome, more challenging for any entrepreneur, legacy growers or otherwise.
Yeah, just to tackle the local control piece, I think an important part of understanding why 80% of the jurisdictions are still banned is that the state of California has very strong local control protections. Interestingly enough, I think my job has probably been the easiest in the state because we have a very pro-regulation, pro-moving forward county, and we've gone through two land use ordinances, a tax measure. But what I'm finding is from our perspective, at least, you can't force locals to regulate this. Prohibition is very strong in the mind of policymakers still. That's an education piece that needs to be happened. But if the state goes to try to force locals to develop ordinances to allow for commercial activity with cannabis, locals will find a way to break it. You can develop an ordinance that has setbacks that don't allow for the actual businesses to find footing. The counties or cities can create tax measures that essentially
are become de facto bans. And so really it comes down to education and grassroots organizing. The people need to get involved. If they want to have legal, tested, clean cannabis and access, they need to demand that of their policymakers, or they need to get rid of their policymakers elect new ones.
Right. Well, let's get right to it. The track and trace from seed to sale. That's a big part of the state program with legalized marijuana, because the testing is so important, especially with the vape crisis surging in the last year or so. So tell me about the encumbrances and the benefits of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you brought up testing. This is a piece that we're focusing on in Sacramento right now, as we see the hemp industry working to regulate itself and the state working to regulate it, and testing comes up a lot. For Humboldt County, we are very proud of the fact that we pass testing, and that's a lot of that is due to the fact that we're not growing in industrial wastelands. Like, we did not have a pre-existing traditional agricultural commodity market that has a lot of pesticides and herbicides. We come from a pretty pristine place. And so for us, reaching those thresholds is not hard. And we're very, very proud of that. And we will fight very hard to keep those thresholds high, because at the end of the day, the consumer needs to have a product that is safe. And where the testing standards are right now, we believe that is what's being done.
Do you think the consumers are aware enough about the importance of the testing that the state requires? So you get certified California authenticated healthy cannabis versus a crapshoot on the open black market.
Yeah. I mean, right now, the way that the testing standards are set, again, which we strongly support, our cannabis is safer than the organic food you're buying. And we think that this is progress, not only just for cannabis, but really for humanity. The trickle-down effect of having high thresholds means that those inputs aren't being put on our land either. So now our waterways are cleaner as the consumer gets a tested product. Testing's a big deal.
Yeah. And what about the sun-grown aspect of cannabis in Humboldt County, where the conditions are ideal? The warm days, the cool nights, the fog rolls in a little bit. It's sort of like the wine industry looking at growing the right grapes in the old vines in Napa and Sonoma counties. Are there analogies to that? And how important is it to have the sun-grown in Humboldt versus the indoor, which, as I understand it, doesn't provide for the same quality?
Yeah, so indoor is a byproduct of prohibition. When the helicopters flew, people put plants inside. So I'll just leave that indoor conversation right there. Okay. But to the outdoor conversation and true full sun grown in native soil, the expression that we're seeing is of the product is undeniably better. I'm just going to say it, in my opinion.
Right.
Also then provides, the production method provides a option for a consumer to buy product that is the most environmentally sound product out there, meaning that the way we grow actually gives back to the environment instead of taking away, and that is through regenerative methods. Mm-hmm. Can talk for days on that.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Now, can you talk about the testing, which pretty much covers a broad, wide range of chemicals that you do or do not have? And if you come up with, too much of this, that, or the other, you're not certified. So you lose that ability to sell in a state licensed dispensary. But we don't see the labeling of terpenes. We don't see the labeling of what one of the lab analytic scientists told me, the entourage of ingredients in cannabis that go a long way in determining its quality, its potency. Mm-hmm. And everyone's obsessed with THC content, but that's just one piece of the puzzle.
I mean, this is the next wave, and one of the benefits of legalization is to be able to have these conversations. And so this is the next wave of education that the consumer will hopefully start hearing about. We're working with the United Cannabis Business Association to really start bringing out these types of conversations and various types of media campaigns on it, because this is a new frontier. It's what we've always known, but now we actually get to talk about it. And I cannot wait. It's going to change cannabis
Now, is it because of the cannabinoid components that the terpenes represent that make one cannabis superior to another?
Yeah, absolutely. And really like honing down on the genetics and where it's grown and how that influences that expression and how that expression works within your own body and your own cannabinoid system. I mean, it's just fascinating. And this is like the front lines. It's the coolest. It's the most fun, I guess I would say. When we talk about cannabis, this is the piece of the puzzle that like brings out the most passion in people.
But would it be safe to say, because I would think the average person is relatively clueless about this. There's not a great awareness. There's not a great education about terpenes, about the cannabinoid system and the endocannabinoid system with our own bodies that sync up and have all those health advantages.
Yeah, and again, this is the piece of the puzzle that legalization gives us the opportunity to actually do is research and talk about it and discuss what's going on. Prior to legalization, we just didn't have the ability to do so. We had to stay quiet to stay safe, and now we don't. So this is going to be the new frontier.
So speaking of frontiers, I mean, California may be the largest, cannabis market in the world, but we as a state were not the first to legalize adult recreational use. So how have other states that came before California influenced the rules and regulations in the path that the great state of California has taken?
That's a great question. I think looking at new policy that's being developed, regulators, industry alike will pivot to other states to see how they did it, what their successes were, what their failures were. But that definitely doesn't dictate policy in California. I think it's a consideration. California is very unique in the sense that, you know, we pave our own way. And so what works for California may not work for Oregon, Colorado, Washington. Mm-hmm. And I think that our regulations really reflect that unique California approach.
Now, one of the challenges for any, you know, grower, cultivator, or even dispensaries is the fact that you cannot park your money in a bank like another business can. So the Safe Banking Act, which has passed the House of Representatives, which is in the Senate, still up in the air and what will happen with that. But that would go a long way toward opening up the career opportunities for entrepreneurs, legacy growers, and the like. But at this juncture, it's an obstacle and a hindrance without having an ability to use your business as the cannabis business as any other business would operate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a public safety issue beyond just the opportunity for entrepreneurial endeavors. Is we need to get the cash out of the system. We need to have access to banking because we're a target every time we go to pay taxes or go to pay payroll, and that's just not okay. And so for us, really, the banking issue, the highest priority to get it passed or fixed, or the opportunity to have it, is public safety to ensure that we're not targets.
Yeah, am I correct? One of the Humboldt High Five legacy growers told me that literally have to have truckloads of cash or truckloads of cannabis transported from point A to point B. And it's a roll of the dice. I mean, you could be targeted in any number of ways as opposed to having the more normal business path to transport funds or product.
Yeah, and it's not just the industry. The state and the counties and cities have to deal with it, too. They're taking on a large amount of cash. The accounting, the audits, the ensuring that there's transparency through that process, it creates a whole nother obstacle. Burden on them, which then ends up being back on the industry because we have to be self-sufficient. And so what we see is that because the county needs to collect cash, our taxes are being spent to handle cash. So it's broken across the board. And it's an interesting thing because the banking issue is the number one and only issue where I see not only all of the industry agreeing on the need for it, but also governments who are involved with regulating the industry. It's the singular issue that we can all get along on.
Yeah, and how about the introduction of, well, not the introduction, but the legalization of hemp nationally, federally? Is that going to be an impetus to a national cannabis legislation in your mind?
Yeah, we'll see what this presidential election looks like. I think that's going to be a really big factor in the next moves from the federal government. The rollout of hemp has been clunky, in my opinion, and I appreciate the state and our county tackling it. I think that the best they can. I think that legalizing hemp may have not been under the intent of legalizing CBD pre-rolls. Maybe it was, I don't know, but it's definitely caused a lot of friction in how to regulate hemp versus cannabis.
Well, it's great catching up with you. Tara Carver, the co-founder and executive director of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance. Best of luck to you. Rich Walkoff on the W420 Radio Network.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety, or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation. W420RadioNetwork.com